Trail Council for Discipline versus Roback. Ms. Aganog, good morning to you. Is there anyone here today on behalf of Mr. Roback?
Yes, Mr. Roback is actually here.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Julie Agan. I'm here on behalf of the Relator Council for Discipline in this original action against the attorney Frank Roback. The matter before you, a motion for judgment on the pleadings was submitted and it was granted by this court, so we're here to discuss sanctions today. But before we get to that, I want to give a little history of the case to give you more of a 3D picture of where we're at. This matter began with a grievance that was submitted to my office in June of 2017 from a client, Caleb Holmes. He reported that he had hired Mr. Roback in 2013 to evaluate and handle a matter for him regarding a trust account. He had paid him $5,000 at that point in time. In 2017, he reported he had not seen any work done and he'd asked for his money back. Mr. Roback told him he was not in a position to refund that money. Mr. Holmes submitted the grievance to my office. We opened a preliminary inquiry at that point in time. We sent that information to Mr. Roback, asked for a response. The first and only response my office received from Mr. Roback was received in August of 2017. Mr. Roback reported at that point in time that a year after taking the matter from Mr. Holmes, he had been hospitalized on and off during that time. He may have missed some deadlines that he had told Mr. Holmes that he would get work done. He again told my office he was not in a position to refund that money. He reported at that point in time that he was on Social Security disability, but no other information was provided. We sent that information to Mr. Holmes as part of the preliminary inquiry, and Mr. Holmes responded and said he had no information that Mr. Roback had been ill at any point in time during the preceding 4 years, and he had been unable to reach Mr. Roback. At that point in time, I sent information back to Mr. Roback. He said that there was a written fee agreement. I asked for a copy of that fee agreement and documentation of any work that he had done. At this point in time, we're at a preliminary inquiry. If work had been done, he could demonstrate he'd earned the money. We probably would have stepped out of the matter. Mr. Roback failed to respond to that request. I again sent that request to Mr. Roback, requesting that documentation he claimed he had. He failed to respond. So at that point in time, we upgraded the matter to a formal grievance. A certified letter was sent to Mr. Roback at the address that he used in his mailing in August of 2017, but that letter was returned as undeliverable. So I sent it.
Ms. Agan, up until the formal grievance, is any of that in our prior information in our record?
There was no hearing, no record. The only thing that you would have before you would be the formal charges.
That's all we have
yes.
in front of us, right?
That's correct.
So isn't that argument sort of seeking to expand the record, and is that appropriate?
I don't know that I'm seeking to expand the record. I'm trying to give you the history where, how we got to the point where he hadn't responded and
but
was upgraded.
But that's not in the record.
I don't believe it's in the formal charges. So I will proceed from formal charges.
Let's assume that nothing before the formal charges
okay.
is properly before us.
Okay.
Where does that take us?
Well, the formal charges, when the formal charges were filed, or when it was upgraded to a formal grievance, what is in the formal charges is that initial letter was sent to Mr. Roback at his last known address. It was returned as undeliverable. A second letter was sent to another address that he had listed on attorney services. It was signed for by a family member. Mr. Roback failed to respond to that. At that point in time, a complaint was drafted and sent to Mr. Roback at that address and asked for him to respond. There was no response, so the information was sent to the Committee on Inquiry, who recommended that formal charges be filed with this court. So formal charges were filed with this court. Mr. Roback then signed the receipt and entry of appearance for this court, but then failed to file an answer and failed to file a brief with this court, though he has appeared today. The motion for judgment on the pleadings that was filed was granted, and so when looking at sanctions, this court has always looked at aggravating and mitigating factors to determine those sanctions in conjunction with other cases that this court has considered. And when we look at aggravating factors, the first one would be that we have a client here who has been harmed, that no work was done. I don't know if a statute of limitations has been missed, but we're now at 5 years and no work has been done on his matter, and he has gotten no money back from Mr. Roback. Other aggravating factors is that Mr. Roback has failed to file an answer with this court, and he failed to file a brief. Without any of those responses, it's been very hard for my office and then ultimately for this court to determine Mr. Roback's fitness to practice or if there are even any underlying issues to consider. Mitigating factors, though, I would submit to the court ultimately that Mr. Roback has not had any prior discipline in the state of Nebraska, and that in his response, he appeared to claim some mitigation with the Social Security disability report, but no further information was provided for this court to determine whether or not it could be determined or be used for mitigation. When we look at cases that this court has recently decided regarding individuals who have failed to respond to my office, that there are underlying issues regarding competence and diligence in the representation of clients, and then failure to file an answer and failure to file a report. Most recently was the State v. Jeremy Jorgensen, where he had failed to provide competent and diligent representation to his clients, and he failed to respond to client requests and that information. He failed to respond to the Council for Discipline after his initial response as well. He also failed to respond to the complaint, he failed to file an answer with this court, and failed to file a brief. And like Roback, that case was upgraded from a preliminary inquiry to a formal grievance. And this court sanctioned Mr. Jorgensen with an indefinite suspension for a minimum of 2 years. And I would argue that that case may be the most on point for what's happening with Mr. Roback. But other cases that this court has looked at, which are addressed in my brief, are Laird Moore, that he had neglected client cases, he failed to communicate with his clients, he failed to provide accounting and refund. He initially responded and then failed to respond later on to other issues. He did file an answer, though, with this court and ultimately submitted a conditional admission for a two-year suspension followed by a two-year supervised probation.
Does it make any difference that it's multiple clients as opposed to one client?
I believe that that's part of the evaluation that the court will look at. I know in Jorgensen that there were two separate client issues, but his failure to respond seemed to escalate his sanction and escalate the matter within my office as well. Here we're only talking one client. We've had no other clients come forward, and it's unclear at this point in time what the status of his law practice is. I know that Mr. Roback, during the interim where he failed to respond to my office and to this court, he did renew his law license for 2018. But obviously attendance ceases, but I don't know the status if he has current clients, if there are any other clients. I only know of the one who submitted the grievance. And finally, the other case that I addressed in my brief was State v. Tye, that there were client issues, client neglect, he failed to provide records to clients and so forth. That case, there were three separate grievances and Mr. Tye had responded to some and not to others. Ultimately, Mr. Tye filed an answer but then failed to file a brief, but he was indefinitely suspended. There were more clients involved in that matter. I would submit that Mr. Roback, that it doesn't rise to the level of Mr. Tye's for an indefinite suspension without some type of minimum. And we would ask that the court, at a minimum, suspend Mr. Roback for 2 years for the neglect of his client, the failure, his violation of his oath of office, failure to demonstrate competent and diligent representation, failure to respond to my office and to this court. And following a two-year suspension, that he be placed on probation for 2 years of monitoring to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Roback, you did not file a brief in this matter, so we do not allow oral argument if there was no brief filed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will go on then to the